Hi, I'm Skating PJ, and this is Let's Talk About It, the Skate Ontario podcast, where we're going to get up close and personal with members of our skating family who have a connection to Ontario. So, let's talk about it.
Hi, everybody. At Skating PJ here with the lovely and talented David Wilson and his
Fred.
Ask Freddy. He's not so fast, is he? As a great game.
Like, I don't like figure skating very much.
How old is he?
Fred is 5 and a half.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, anyway, he's adorable. Fred, you going to answer some questions for us? Fast Freddy? Maybe not. It's funny how our dogs have voices, right?
Yeah.
I've always done that. Okay, as much as I would love to talk about the dog, we're actually here to talk about you. This is Let's Talk About It, the Skate Ontario podcast, where we feature stories and people and happenings from Skate Ontario. And you, my friend, qualify. So let's go way back to the beginning. You were a skater. You were a competitor. Talk to me about where you skated, what skating meant to you at that time.
Okay, well, I'm from a small town. I'm from a very small town, Nobleton, Ontario. And I don't know how big it is now, but at the time it was, you know, maybe 3,000 people. And, you know, but they did have a figure skating club. And for one reason or another, I don't know why, I ended up starting to skate there when I was about 5 or 6. And I remember my first competition outside of that realm, you know, outside of what went on at Nobleton, was in Sarnia, Ontario. That was where my brother was living at the time. And I was 9 years old. So by the time I was 14, I think, we made our way to the cricket club and started skating there. Now, in terms of being a competitive skater, my career was not very illustrious. to be honest, I mean, I loved skating and it was my whole world. But I never made it to the national level in novice, and then went to go pass my junior test. And at the same time, I realized that it wasn't for me.
Okay.
So I quit skating for a whole summer when I was 17. Because after going to the cricket club, suddenly all my friends were international level skaters, or at least national level competitors, and many of them also international level competitors. And so the kind of landscape of my skating world changed drastically. And I would have loved to have been a part of that, but I just wasn't good enough. You know,
were you a big fish in a little pond in Nobleton, would you say?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think when you're the boy, you're always
the boy.
You're always a big fish in the little. But so I was like the only boy. But I mean, yeah. Yeah, I guess I was. Yeah, I just didn't have the jumping ability. I probably should have been in ice dance.
Yeah,
but I had no interest in partnering. I kind of hated ice dance because I had a really bad problem with my left knee called Osgood-Schlatter's. It's like a growth disorder. And it was very debilitating. And as much as it affected my jumping, it also made it really hard to pass my dance test. And like I failed my Harris Tango 9 times. And I mean, it's not because I couldn't count the music or do the steps. It's just I couldn't get the sharp up, downs, you know, on the beat. And so anyway, so I kind of really hated ice dancing. And it was never even a consideration that I do anything else but be a freestyler. But I didn't have the jumping ability at all. Like, I mean, I got it up to double axel and that was kind of it, you know.
You know, it's funny you talk about ice dancing because you are one of the few choreographers that I've ever known who has choreographed for every discipline, including ice dance, including one of my favorite free dances of all time. I'm talking about Marie-France Dubreuil and Patrice Lauzon and Etta James, At Last.
Oh, that's your favorite. Oh.
One of my favorites, absolutely. It's one of the ones that is in my playlist. I absolutely love it. I even know where I saw it. So for the first time, I saw it a lot.
Oh, that's so sweet. I've never heard. I'm used to people mentioning the other one.
It'll come back to you.
Such a space case. The one before, Somewhere in Time.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
People saying that one, you know.
Yeah. No. At last, Etta James. Because the way that you choreographed it, the way that they presented it, it was like being at the most wonderful, let's say, wedding reception as things are fading, and there's just like the couple. I loved it. Oh.
Yeah. Well, that's totally what we were hoping for.
So. I know. Well, it hit the mark. So back in the day, you're at the cricket club, you're skating. First of all, who was coaching you and who were the big names at the time that you were on the ice with? Because I had that experience of being, you were a talented skater. I was not even a talented skater. And I'm on the ice with all of these fantastic skaters, summer school at the cricket club. And I mean, international.
When I first, I'll never forget my first day. Let me walk you through my first experience. I'll never forget it. So I was like 13 and it was like a part-time situation, like in the evenings. Yep. But I remember when we went there, and I think my parents probably had a meeting to become members. And I think I did one of the afternoon sessions, and it was terrifying. I mean, the skaters, it was all these amazing skaters on the ice. And I just remember skating around the perimeter, you know. But one of the first people that I remember speaking to was David Watson.
Okay.
And Dave Watson, I remember he was there, and he took it upon himself to come over and say hi to me and my parents. And I was so shy, like painfully shy, you know, because I mean, as a kid, being from a small town, was always teased and bullied. And
sure,
I had a terrible self-image and was really kind of like, you know, encumbered by that, I would say, before going to the cricket club. And I remember how amazed I was that he was being so nice. And I'd seen him skate and he was really good, doing all the triples and, you know, and he was very, very nice. And then another person I remember being extremely kind to me when I was young was Gordon Forbes. And Gordon was, I mean, he was second in senior men's, like he was a medalist, and he'd been to worlds, and I remember him helping me with my flying sit spin and my death drop.
Wow. And
just for no reason. I mean, I remember him just helping me for some reason, like I don't even know why. And I was so impressed, you know. I mean, when you're a kid and somebody 4 or 5 years older than you who's like on TV, you know, I mean, it was a big deal, you know. But then, of course, you know, it was, I remember Tracy Wainman coming back from Mariposa. It was like right after I joined, and I was a complete nobody. Tracy, who had been a giant, you know, international sensation as a kid, and then kind of lost it all, was up in Mariposa, and then she came back, to the cricket at, right as she'd lost it all. And suddenly I'm like in the rehearsals for like the cricket club show in April or whenever they do it, like all clubs, they do a show. I'm a very self-conscious, you know, 14-year-old boy, and I get put in a group number with Tracy Wainman, of all people, and we're partnered up together. And you know, she's like, to me at that point, this famous person,
star,
right? And we had to do a fish lift, and I just remember,
which is one of those, right?
You know, you have to put your arms around her, under her leg, and around the torso, and then lift them up. And oh my god. I mean, I was terrified. And I just remember her laughing because I guess my arm kept slipping up too high, you know. We ended up becoming best friends, like, I mean, immediately, you know. And so Tracy Raymond was really my first really, really close friend from the cricket club. But I ended up having like a whole slew of amazing friendships. And I got to be front row center, part of her comeback in a way, and her support group. And, you know, this was a girl who had had it all and then lost it all. And then she was fighting her way back and no one believed in her. And Skate Canada, all different people than are in charge now, mind you, but the people that were in charge at that point, they really had no support for her whatsoever. I mean, I remember she came back and I think she made it through to nationals because it was a year she didn't make it through to nationals.
Yep.
Like she didn't even make it through to nationals. Yep. Then she did. And I think she came fifth, which technically at that time would have put her on the national team, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
In spite of that, they gave her nothing.
Okay.
Nothing. And she came back again. And then she was third. And then they had to give her something. And then she came back again and she won. And she shut them all up. You know, like, I'm so fortunate that I was there at that time that I got to kind of be part of her world. And, you know, even though I didn't have the ability myself to be one of the real players, you know, I got to be privy to the behind the scenes going on. And she's one of my heroes because she, it took so much personal strength of character for her to keep fighting back.
Yeah.
With a lot of more naysayers than anything else. So
it brings up an interesting question. I mean, basically, as I said, you have choreographed. If someone were to look up a list of your clients, it's pretty much a who's who of figure skating, and it goes across all of the disciplines, which is very unusual because usually people will say, no, I don't do that. And oh no, I will do that, including synchronized skating, which is not something that people who are used to doing figure skating choreography with one, maximum two people, that they'll take on. So I guess what I want to know, though, is what are the lessons from, because that was, you know, those were experiences that taught you humility firsthand, I mean, your own, plus observing your dear friend having to get clobbered 14 times before she can get back on, you know, back up to where we all knew her potential was. So what are the lessons that are then those that you incorporate in your work with your clients?
Well, I mean, I think for me, in the work that I've ended up doing as a choreographer, which, by the way, was never a goal of mine. I mean, it really wasn't. And I don't mean to sound flippant, but I never would have aspired to being a choreographer.
What did you want to be?
I wanted to be an architect or something in the psychological field because I grew up, I had a lot of problems with anxiety as a child.
Yep.
A lot of problems with anxiety. And I was very interested in psychology and, mm-hmm. and figure myself out, trying to figure the world out. And so had I gone on scholastically, that would have been either of those two directions. I mean, architecture was, I'm not sure I would have ended up in that world. I don't think I would have bode well because it's very hierarchical. I think I would have really gotten lost in like psychological studies. I think I would have really loved the pursuit of that. I don't know where I would have ended up, but
you ended up doing psychological stuff anyway, because often working with clients in order to get the best out of them, you have to be able to understand what's going on upstairs. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, it's definitely a people. I mean, we're working with people, and yeah. So, yeah, but I mean, I'm happy that I ended up you know, doing choreography. It's something I didn't realize that I would be good at, but I remember. So I took from Ozzie Colson, and Ozzie was a diva. I mean, he was, you know, he was so, I mean, he performed with Sonia Henie, and he was a Canadian champion himself, and, you know, and he'd worked with so many great skaters and everything. And I remember him being very frustrated with me because I was really shy. And really, so more than shy, I was painfully self-conscious. Actually. Okay. So I don't know if people can relate to that, but it's like you literally imagine people laughing at you all the time. It's debilitating.
Yeah.
And so I remember him one time, you know, at the end of a session or the end of a day before we left, him, you know, he wanted to talk to my mother and he was complaining to my mother about something. And I remember my mother being very kind of retort, like she was, I don't know if that's the right word, but retortful. Like she had a comeback, you know. And I remember her saying, "Oh, but Mr. Colson, you should see him in the living room when he doesn't know I'm watching. Really, you should really see him when the music is playing, the radio is on. You should see him, honestly." And, you know, and so, you know, my mother knew, I guess, that I had some ability. It was all hidden. But I think for me, to get back to what you're
calling, yeah,
it's the music. And for me, it was a very private thing. I hear music, I see action. It music always has elicited an emotive response from me.
Right.
So whether it's abstract or very tangible, like per se, if there's words and there's an actual story that's unfolding, or if it's just notes and chords that have, it's always an emotive response that I have always felt. And so the movement is just a reaction to that, you know? It's really, really, I don't know. It's natural for me. And I suppose whatever dance training, whatever, you know, kind of the years that I performed in Ice Capace, the people that I was exposed to, the things that I've loved, the people that inspired me has for sure influenced my aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
But on a fundamental level, it's more of a very rudimentary emotive response to the music that I think I always had.
So let me ask you this, because I know that you've choreographed for babies, for little tiny skaters, young skaters. I know that you've choreographed for Olympic champions and everybody in between. So you have that young skater who is maybe, you know, like a young David Wilson, shy, a little bit self-conscious. Are there tricks in your toolbox that you're using to help bring out the joy of skating in that client?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that. I really love the young ones. But more often than not, I work with these incredibly talented young ones that are everything I never was, you know? And they're not shy, you know, and they're game on sort of thing. So that's really fun for me, kind of living vicariously through them. But every once in a while, whether they're young or sometimes they're actually really good, more advanced, maybe they do triples and maybe they do triple triples, but they are self-conscious in a way, in spite of their accomplishments. And so I really love those experiences because it is cathartic.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what it's like to be in their shoes. So I try to set the scene, and it's all about kind of setting the scene that there's like a safe place to express yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's a very private sort of thing. And it's, for me, I learned for myself that performing is not necessarily showing off.
Okay.
It's just allowing yourself to feel and being transparent and forgetting about the audience in a way.
Okay.
You don't always have to sell it. You just have to let it show, you know?
When you hear music, do you see color or shapes? Or is it just like an arm movement? Like, tell me what is the emotion? What are you feeling?
Shapes a little bit.
Okay.
Colors, no. I know that whole thing about color. Like, I'm not saying that there's not validity to it. For me, it's actual movement. And it's actual emotively based movement. That's very human, you know.
So you like, see human movement.
What's that word? Pedestrian kind of movement, almost like acting.
Okay.
You know, like as if you're having an argument with someone and people are angry, or you just heard sad news and you're sad, or you're really excited and you're, oh shoot, I think I need to. My battery is low. Hold on 1 second. I'll just go get my charger cord.
While David Wilson is gone, I'm hoping that all of you are going to be thinking about your favorite David Wilson programs while he gets his David Wilson phone charger. You know, it's so interesting, like all this kind of discussion, because my next question, as you're charging your phone and you can hear me, I know you can.
I just don't want us to get disconnected.
No, I do too. So, but I want you to be thinking about this question, which is, what is your favorite kind of music?
Oh, I don't have a favorite.
Okay.
I couldn't answer that question. I really don't have a favorite. I mean, I think probably my, you know, if you took the easy route, if I took the easy route for myself is soft and sad and introspective, because that's the kind of person I am. Like that was my childhood. I was often sad and introspective, and you know, that kind of music really touches me. Within my work, I have had the most fun doing so many other kind of styles.
Yeah,
and my favorite things to do are the things that take me outside of myself.
Okay, that's fair. Now, what comes first, the client or the music?
Oh, the client.
Okay. So
mind you, I have several lists of musics that every time I hear a piece, now that, you know, we have computers and everything, we can make lists. I have very long lists of musics that I like for some reason or another. And then they just sit there until. And I keep going back through them all the time. Every time I get asked to work for somebody, I start there. If they don't know what they want to do, then I start with my lists of things that I like.
So. Do people come to you and say, I've already decided I want to skate to Sing, 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 and you just work with that? Okay.
Yeah, a lot of
people. I love Sing, 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 by the way.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Sandra Bezick and I used that for a production number for Yuna Kim's last show in Korea. I had Sandra come, and was one of my dreams to work with her. And so I asked her to come and be part of it. And we created the show together. And that was our finale number piece, was Sing, Sing, Sing. And it was so fun because we went somewhat theatrical. We made it as a night out. You know, it was really fun. Really, really fun. It was fight scene and everything.
Oh, that would have been good. Put your dukes up. So I also want to know a little bit about, so you and I have talked about, you know, as I was getting ready every year to go to Worlds, to work on Worlds in some capacity. David, are you going to be there? No, I'm going to be doing something else or resting or whatever. When you have, I like to think of given birth to the program through the choreographic process. I know people sometimes come back to choreographers for tweaking and for, you know, polishing and making sure. But when you've had that last session with a skater is it truly theirs or is there a last session? Like, tell me about that.
Oh, it's so hard. It's so hard to let go.
Yeah.
And when is it done? When is it ready? And when is it done? It's really, really hard. And you know, as much, you know, the few skaters in my career that I've had the good graces of time with, mm-hmm. you know, the ones that have either because they live nearby, or we've just had that relationship and that ongoing connection. I mean, I've had several of those. And so I've been really fortunate that way. But even with those, it's so hard. It is so hard because it's never done. In my mind, it's like, it's never good enough. It's never done. There's always something. You can always go a little layer deeper and find a little nugget that you missed before. But in the end, you kind of, I mean, the goal is for them to own it. Right.
Yeah.
And it has to be where you are no longer a parent.
Okay.
As a choreographer. It has to be as if they choreographed it themselves. I mean, in my mind, it that's how the audience should feel. They should not be thinking about me, you know.
Okay.
It has to look like as if they dreamt it and they woke up and they performed it that way. Do you know what I mean? It's such a fine line when you're working through things and you're correcting them and you're trying to look for what would be best and what looks best on them, but also inspiring them to really own it and do it the way they feel it, you know? So it's a dance. It's a constant negotiation that I find I'm always making within and of myself.
And has there ever been a program that has surprised you that you thought to yourself, not sure, and it's turned out to be just an absolute home run, or conversely, a program that you thought this is going to be everything and it has not hit the way that you thought it might? Does that ever enter into the picture at all?
Yeah. I don't know if there's been any big surprises that surprised me that I didn't think they would be. I mean, in terms of working on a piece of music, there are times where I've done something where I wasn't in love with the music, but they were.
Okay.
And by the end of the process, I love what we did. So therefore,
okay.
I love the music. Not to sound egotistical, but it's just like you hear it a different way when you've been kind of in bed with it creatively, you know? So that has definitely happened to me many times. And that's one of the things that has taught me to not be overly attached to music I love.
Okay.
You know, I'm not overly concerned with finding music that I love. Like I am open. If they really love it, and I think that there's a window, like that there's a chance that it could, you know what I mean? I have pretty wide, I have wide parameters. But in terms of once the work is done, I think I've always known when a piece could be really good. You kind of feel it.
Yep.
That doesn't always happen. There's been okay. many times where I thought, oh, damn, I thought that could have been really good. But, you know, life is complicated. There's such a thing as injuries.
Yes.
You know, it's really easy to fall. And when they fall on their jumps, the appreciation is not there for the choreography as much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a really high risk sport. So you kind of have to let things play out. You can't have too high expectations.
You know, it is high risk. And as Kurt Browning says, it's not like it's a shift and you can get off the ice and somebody else gets on in your place. When they close that door and they've announced your name, you're up, for better or for worse.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you. You know, many of us who love skating, myself included, can look at a program and go, gee, that's a beautiful program. I imagine that that's one of David Wilson's programs. But that does not mean that the programs look the same. It's the quality of the work that makes me believe that it's your work, frankly. But what I want to know is, how do you make the programs so different? I know of lots of choreographers over the course of my life who you go, oh, that's a so-and-so program because so-and-so has done that program, that program, that program, and they all look virtually the same. Your programs look...
That's a nightmare to me.
I know. Me too. I can understand that, absolutely. But in the case of your work, it's quality work. You, Lori Nichol, are the two that jump to my mind. Sandra Bezick as well. Jeff Buttle. I mean, there's quite a few of you that are able to make that piece unique to that skater. So what is the trick to that?
I don't know. I mean, it's funny. I've had this conversation with Sandra, for instance. Like, how do you not repeat yourself? And we I think a lot of us, I mean, I know Sandra and I do, we have this desire to constantly reinvent ourselves. And I mean, yeah. I know I'm constantly, you know, looking at other dance and other dance styles and movements and just wanting to like just start over all the time and not even be me. But I think at the end of the day, we are who we are. And we do all have limitations. But I think the most important thing is to be find something that's truthfully your own. And that is also inspired by the person that you're working with. And okay. So, you know, I've done Romeo and Juliet many different times for many different skaters. And each time it's fresh and new in my mind because it's a different edit of the music.
Yeah. There are
many different sources. So maybe it's a combination of different parts of different versions, or maybe it's one particular version or the other version. And then, you know, maybe it's a girl, maybe it's a boy, maybe it's a dancing, maybe it's a pair. And then, you know, the last time was 10 years ago or 5 years ago. And so, you know, it's a different day and mm-hmm. it's different, you know, so in terms of my aesthetic, my sense of what is, beautiful or impactful, how to skate, how to move. For sure, I have my limitations. We all have our limitations. And so you're constantly trying to reinvent yourself, but you're also working with a different, unique body and a unique person with a unique personality. And that's part of my process is that person. So in that regard, it's always by definition going to be unique.
Mm-hmm. Adam Rippon,
person, you know.
Adam Rippon, Romeo and Juliet. How long ago was that?
Oh, did I do that for him?
Yeah.
Oh.
It was very nice. He was like a junior world champion at the time.
Okay.
It's a long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a good one. People look it up.
I've done it a lot. I mean, you know, that's the thing. Each new generation comes along, and somebody from each new generation wants to tackle the big famous classic.
Yep.
You know, somebody wants to be Carmen. Somebody wants to be Juliet. Somebody wants to be Romeo. You know, some pair team wants to be Romeo and Juliet. And, you know, and then 15 years later, somebody comes and they each deserve a chance to tackle that great classic. So,
but to be honest, there are some pieces of music that are so iconic and so
yeah.
One like E. Pagliacci, Tyler Cranston. There is nobody else. Yeah. Too Beautiful to Last, nobody else. Yeah. Kurt Browning and Casablanca. I mean, yeah. Other people have skated to that music, but it, you know.
Well, it depends on what you've been exposed to and what your world has been. You know, yep. Not everyone remembers Tyler, right? So, you know, I mean.
Yep.
The thing that comes to mind for me is Bolero.
I was just going to say that.
Cor Valentin.
And yeah.
That piece has been the kiss of death many times over for skaters after them.
Yeah.
You know, ladies, I mean, Michelle Kwan did it. You know, Carolina Coster did it. Shoma Uno did it more recently. I mean, like, through the ages, everyone has taken a stab at it. Everyone takes a stab at it, but no one has superseded what Torvald Lundin did to it.
Yeah.
And I think for anyone who's been alive for the last, you know, 50 years would agree that it's kind of, not to say that what Carolina did to it wasn't beautiful or Shoma, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are certain pieces like that that, like, I really try hard to help navigate scanners away from.
Well, you know, I'll never.
Pieces.
I don't know if it was you, to be honest, but you did work with Joanie Rochette, but I think it might have been with the Firebird. That was
Firebird for her.
See?
Yes.
But what I loved about that Firebird was that it was not the Firebird edit that we normally see in skating. It was a different feel.
It was a different take. It was a different take.
It's gorgeous.
Well, I have to say, let's march way back to that. That was my first few years of living in Toronto. I just started, just been exposed to working with Lenore Kay, who I did not
know. Hey, Lenore.
I did not know prior to that. And she was really instrumental in creating that piece with me. And we both listened to it extensively, you know, the 2 hours of the whole piece. And then we had a meeting and came together. And I really wanted to end where people start.
Okay.
Because that, to me, is the coolest piece of music. Mm-hmm. And she found a way. And I, you know, I had all these other little bits and pieces that I loved, you know. She, in this most magical way, found a way to weave it all together that it made sense musically. And we kind of, like, it's like a whole, that was a really valuable experience to me. It taught me that you can really reimagine pieces.
Yep.
And especially with the modern technology that we have today of editing digitally, it's amazing what they can do. And so, yeah, so I always have to thank Lenore for that project in particular. Was very challenging, and she supported me in my ideas.
Yeah,
and helped show me that we could make my crazy ideas work.
Well, and you know what? It wasn't so crazy. It was genius. As I said, I'm not sitting here with notes in front of me. I've just run up the stairs to turn the computer on to get organized for this. So there are so many of your programs that have left an impact out there in the skating world, but certainly an impression on my brain. That program's 15 years old.
Thanks.
You know, when you think about it. Big shout out to Lenore Kay, by the way, for people who don't know. She's the most amazing, I'm going to call her a music historian. She has a collection of music that is unlike anybody else's and is truly a masterful a source of editing for music and putting skating together.
She was a coach, and she was a skater, and she was a coach, but then she took it upon herself to train herself in music theory, music composition.
Yep.
You know, like, in order to be able to tackle these big classical pieces and to rearrange them. Yeah, it's amazing. She kind of really created a whole new, more sophisticated.
Industry.
Yeah, more sophisticated take on what you can do with music.
Amazing.
The forefront of that, for sure.
So you have, I know, 100 million programs that are your favorites. They don't have to be yours, but are there a couple of programs that you enjoy just watching, experiencing? Could be people that you've worked with, maybe not, could be from way back in the day, could be from when you were a kid. Are there any programs that sort of jump out at you?
Oh my God. I'm really bad. I mean, I have my favorites of, well, yeah.
If you don't, I've got a synchro question as well.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm always nervous to answer those questions when it comes to my own work. Yeah. Because it's like, let's say you had 8 kids.
Yep.
And it's the kind of question, well, which kid do you love the most?
I've got 3. I could tell you. I've got 3. I could tell you.
I always feel so uncomfortable with those questions.
But it's not about best. It's not about best necessarily. Yeah. It's not about most winning. It's about something about the experience that just you treasure. It could be anything. Like, it doesn't have to be the work.
For those, okay. Well, it's easy for that because, but it's more also because I was there and I'm not always there. You know, I mean, Jeffrey's performances when he won in Sweden were magical. And I wish I had been there, but I wasn't there. When Yuna won in Vancouver, I was there. And I wasn't in the Kiss and Cry, but I was in the stands. And I couldn't breathe.
Yep.
I mean, I barely took a breath.
It was amazing.
Yes. And then when Javi won in Boston, I was there and I was with him. I was by his side the whole weekend because Brian had so many other students and Javi was having this weird problem with his skate. And I mean, I was there and I was part of the coaching staff. I mean, it was one of those rare cases where I was actually in the Kiss and Cry, which I never had. Thank God I was there because there was this weird thing going on with his boot and Brian didn't have time to be with him because he had to coach everybody else. And then so I was for 3 days with Javi nonstop trying to figure out what to do with this boot problem, and we're in the physio and then we tried again and it still wasn't better. And then, I mean, he basically didn't skate for 2 days before the long, and then he goes out there on the warm-up and he just skated around once and bent his knees a couple times. He was like, oh, I think it's okay. And we were like, okay. So, I mean, he did one spin and then he went and did his long program. I think he was skating first. I can't even remember. It was all a blur. And he was just as if he could not make an error. It was one of those strange, it's both with Yuna in Vancouver and then with Javi. I mean, I really picked my events to go to, didn't I?
Yeah, yes.
It was as if they couldn't possibly have made a step wrong. And it felt otherworldly. And I thought, is it my prayers being answered? Like, is it because my mother really is in charge? I mean, it was weird, you know?
Yeah. So, those are two good ones to be there for, that's for sure.
Yeah, so.
Okay, last question, and it's an easy one. And that is, we have lots of young skaters who are going to be listening and are listening to this podcast. What are your 3 top little bits of advice for them?
Oh, well, I mean, I think you should really do it out of love. It's a tough sport because it takes a lot of personal drive. And so hopefully it's something that they just absolutely love. I mean, I just remember I couldn't wait for the next time I was back on the ice. It was a very personal experience for me, skating and feeling what I was doing and trying to figure it out. So I would hope for the kids of today that it's about the craftsmanship. It's about not perfectionism, but the craftsmanship of the blade on the ice and the posture and the positions and what we can do, what's possible and what's beautiful and what feels right, you know? And then in terms of success, I think that you should follow your dreams. So if you have the dreams, a dream of being on television and being on the podium at some huge event, then just go for it. Because more often than not, we do actually become our dreams, I believe. I never dreamt of being a champion. I never did. I never had that dream. I loved the sport and I loved the way it felt to me, but it was very a private thing. My dream was the dreamscape that I always felt listening to music. So I guess my dreams came true because that's what I do, and that I make a living at it.
And last piece of advice. So that's two. We need three.
Three? I would say that stick with it. There was a time in my adolescence where I wanted to give it all up, but I wasn't quite done. I didn't have my gold figure, my gold free. You know, I was 17. I knew that my competitive career was not going to happen any more than it had. And I was good at school, and I thought, okay, well, I'm wasting my time. I need to move on. And it was the first and only time my father actually stepped in. He let me have the summer off, and I worked at Wonderland for the whole summer. And then when it got close to the end of the summer, he sat me down and he said, so what are we going to do about your skating? And I said, well, I quit skating. What are you talking about? And all of a sudden he got a little huffy, you know, and my dad had an imposing character. And he said, well, I didn't pay for your goddamn skating all these goddamn years for you to quit without your goddamn gold figure and your goddamn gold freestyle. And I'm like, Dad, oh my God. Like, my parents had never pushed me, you know? And I'm really glad he did, because having to come back and put in those hours, I mean, to pass your gold figure back in the day, you would know.
I didn't pass my gold figure, but I know.
But I mean, it was so
hard. It was a lot.
The commitment, and that I did it, and I pushed through. And also, I got to have lessons from a different coach, Peter Burka, because, you know, my relationship with Mr. Colson was over. And I thought I said to my dad, well, if I come back, then you have to get me lessons with Peter Burka. And I thought for sure she would say no.
Jokes on you.
It was actually just a ploy, because I really didn't want to skate anymore. And my dad was very charming, and he actually went into the career, and he got her to, and I was her first student on her own, because she only ever came and helped her mother.
Yep.
She was never a coach. I was her first real student. And my gold figure was the first test that she ever submitted as a coach with her name on it. And I passed.
Wow. Good for you.
Yeah. So things like that can happen when you stick with it, you know, like it might not be what you want, what you're going for, but something good will come out of sticking with it.
You know what, David Wilson, thank you so much for sticking with this interview. It has been an absolute delight to talk to you. And I just want to thank you so much for being on Let's Talk About It for Skate Ontario. You are an Ontario and a world legend. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, PJ.
See you soon.
Have a good night.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Let's Talk About It, the Skate Ontario podcast. Don't forget to follow us on social media. I'm at Skating PJ. Until next time, bye for now.